Hello, my friends. It's Monday, May 11th, 2026, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, your weekly wake and bake, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in Southern Oregon. On this week's Smoke Session, let's talk about the rationalizations of the resist libs, the spinelessness of the centrists, and President Obama and the executive who dare not be named. But before we get to all the serious political stuff, we've got time for three quick hits.
Big balls between your legs.
Where do you get your balls big enough to ask me that?
Keep your eye off your balls.
You gotta pretend you got big balls.
Big balls. Just like me.
I've never seen such big balls.
Here's something disturbing that popped up on my feed the other day. Ball maxing. Have you heard about this? This is a trend that young guys, I guess Gen Z guys, under the influence of these manosphere influencers, are taking to surgically enhancing their scrotums to enlarge their balls with injections or something like this. And this whole thing comes about because some guy, I guess, did it and died, had some sort of terrible reaction and died from it. So it brought out this story about ball maxing, enlarging the balls, because apparently, you know, that's what women want. The guy with some big balls. Guys, forget about all that macho shit and learn how to play guitar. Come on now. You know, there's two things that a woman cares about when it comes to your junk. Number one, is it attached to a guy who's nice to me? Number two, does it function? That's it, guys. Are you good to her and does it function? How about instead of this balls maxing, fellas, why don't you try some personality maxing instead?
I got her into fucking Walmart.
All right, yeah, but, you know, if we go to, like, buy one from a fucking Walmart.
Fucking Walmart.
I can't go to Target. I can't go to Best Buy. I can't go to fucking Walmart, Kmart. You fucking name it, I can't go there.
So last week, I had to go into the local Walmart, and I had one thing in particular that two things I wanted to purchase for the car. I needed to get a quart of motor oil, and I needed to get a can of seafoam, which is like an engine cleaner, right? So, a fuel system cleaner. So, I went into the Walmart, back to their auto section. I went back, and I found the oil, and there it is. There's a 5W30 oil that I need. And then I went around the next aisle to find the seafoam. And wouldn't you know it, it's all locked up in one of those glass counters. And then you got to find the button. All right, where's the button for me to call someone over here to open this locked thing? And, well, there was no button. There was no button anywhere in this aisle. I'm like, what the hell? So I look over to the right, over to where, like, the paint place is. And there's nobody sitting over there. And then there's the auto section with the tires and everything over there. And there's one guy working over there, one old guy working over there. I got to go get this guy. All right. So I walk over to the guy. Walk. And excuse me. I got something I need to get out of the case over there. Could you open that for me? Yeah, sure. Come on. Walks me over there. And we get to the case and he opens it up. All right, great. And I grab the little can of seafood and I start walking off and he goes, hold on. I'm like, yeah, what? And he goes, you need to come with me. I'm like, what? I'm like, no, I just need to check out. I'll go check out. No, I have to walk you up to the front with that. Now, in the meantime, there was another set of people next to me looking at the other case that wanted the other case open. And I'm like, why don't you just help him with the other case? I'll go check out. And he's like, no, I got to. Like, all right. So I had to wait for this guy to help open the other case for these people and get their thing and then lock the case back up. And then with me, had to go walk me over to the register to go buy this thing. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Why are you walking me over here, but not those other people getting something out of the cabinet? And maybe I'm taking this too personally, but does anyone else get offended by this? Hi, welcome to Walmart. I think you're a thief. I think you're a thief, and I'm going to have to follow you to make sure you actually buy this thing. It's just so offensive. And the thing that really, really irks me about this is, like, the can of seafoam is, what, $12, $10? I don't know what it is. It's not a whole lot of money. But in all these other aisles, next to the aisle that doesn't have the stuff locked up, are all sorts of things that are more expensive and smaller. If I wanted to rip you off, grab something and stick it in my pocket, there's all sorts of other things I could grab other than this can of seafoam. It's just, it's ridiculous what they're doing here. And you know, they used to do this. They used to do this with black hair care products. They used to have, you know, in the women's section there, we got all your style and hairsprays and gels and mousses and stuff. The African-American products used to be locked up. And there was a major outcry from that because, of course, the inherent racism of that is that you're kind of saying that all black people are going to be thieves or something. Meanwhile, the white people's hair care stuff isn't locked up. And after much outcry about that, Walmart nationwide abandoned that. They don't lock up the black hair care products anymore. But they are locking up the seafoam. So, I guess if something could only be used by one particular race, you can't lock it up. But if all races could use it, you can. You can automatically assume anyone is a thief, but you can't automatically assume a black person is a thief. How about we just stop assuming people are thieves and let people shop? If you're going to have self-checkout, then you're going to have some losses. This idea of locking stuff up in the store has got to go.
You're a piece of shit.
You're a piece of shit.
Your problem is you're a piece of shit.
Give me the top 10 reasons you're a piece of shit.
You're a piece of shit.
You're a piece of shit.
You're a piece of shit. And everybody knows it.
Your mama thinks you're a piece of shit.
I've been thinking a lot lately about the press and the way they handle Donald Trump. You may have caught that interview that he did with Nora O'Donnell on 60 Minutes, where she was reading the shooter's manifesto and how he couldn't have the crimes of a pedophile, rapist, traitor on his hands. And Trump responds, "I'm not a pedophile, I'm not a rapist." And Nora O'Donnell says, "Oh, you thought he was speaking of you." And yet, after he said, "I'm not a pedophile, I'm not a rapist," she was so happy with herself to have that get, that little gotcha moment. "Oh, you think he was talking about you," that she had clearly prepared for. Instead of preparing what the answer should have been, "I'm sorry, Mr. President, but a jury of your peers in the E. Jean Carroll case adjudicated the fact that you had raped someone. You are a rapist, sir." But nobody can say that. Nobody will come out and say that. He was out the other day. He was caught, I guess, on a mic after Rachel Scott, the black female reporter, had asked him a question saying, "She's a bitch." And we've heard him say, "Quiet, piggy." Or call women, especially black women, black people, low IQ individuals. And I can't imagine there's not anyone out there who would finally respond to this guy after all these years. Any one of these reporters could become a legend, if in one of those instances he just stopped and said, "What the fuck is wrong with you, you racist piece of shit? Why are you always denigrating black women? What the fuck is wrong with you, you asshole?" Just once. If anyone ever did that, first of all, I think he'd be totally shocked that someone was calling him out to his face. And yeah, sure, that person might lose their job as a reporter, might lose their access. But can you imagine the opportunities that would await them after that? After finally and boldly not just proclaiming the emperor has no clothes, but he's a fucking asshole too. That's my dream, man. Just before he dies. And we've gotten a couple of glimpses of that one time when he was touring that auto plant or whatever. And someone yelled out pedophile protector and he went and flipped him off. That's as close as we've gotten. Hell, at least an Iraqi threw a shoe at George W. Bush. Can't someone call this man out to his face? God, preferably a Democratic candidate for president.
Our top story tonight.
The politics of the situation is just too difficult.
You don't have the votes to block this.
It's just not that easy to pull off from a social point of view.
You don't have the votes.
There's just nothing we can do about that.
You don't have the votes.
This week, I got to talk a little bit about the fallout from the Louisiana versus Calais decision, the Supreme Court decision that has gutted the final plank of the Voting Rights Act and returned us back to a Jim Crow South. If you haven't heard, this is the part of the Voting Rights Act that required the creation of what they call majority-minority districts. And that is a situation where, without it, the southern states, first of all, you had a situation where all the black people are packed into particular areas. This was the result of redlining that had happened throughout the 20th century, where African Americans could only get home loans in certain neighborhoods. So we made sure all the blacks were kept in one particular place. That's the packing part that they call this. Pack all the black people into one particular place. And then the cracking part is where the southern states would then take, you know, think of a pizza pie. And then cut that pizza pie all up into slices so you can take one slice of black people and put them into this big old white district over here and another slice of black people and put them in that big old white suburban district over there and take this slice of black people and run a little line all the way up over to this rural white district over here. So basically you diluted the political power of black voices so that they could not elect the candidates of their choice. And in this decision, it's basically someone on Blue Sky had pointed out this was the how come there's no Whites History Month version of a Supreme Court decision. Because what they've done is they've taken the 14th Amendment and its promises of equal protection under the law and to end discrimination against minorities. And they've turned it over. They've turned it on their head to say that, oh, no, if you create these districts where black people have a majority say, you're discriminating against white people. Well, the white people could never elect anybody if all these black people have their... It's just insane. It's absolute insanity. And so I wanted to talk about the fallout from this. And of course, you know, there's the real world fallout that we're going to see a precipitous drop in the number of black representatives in the U.S. House come 2029. You watch that. They'll just be falling right off. All of Jasmine Crockett's one who's going to be gone, right? Not because of this decision particularly, but... The southern states, as soon as this decision dropped, Tennessee rushed to get rid of its one black majority district in Memphis. We saw the video there from Representative Justin Jefferson, who's going to be written out, burning a paper Confederate flag, being blocked by the white troopers from being able to attend the meeting in which they were discussing, all the white Republicans there were discussing how they were going to cut up his district and eliminate his seat, eliminate him from the chamber. And this is going to happen all over. Florida is going to do the same thing. Louisiana is going to do the same thing. Pretty much everywhere but Georgia, where at least blacks have put together enough political power there to be able to stop such a thing. But I wanted to get into the online fallout from this as well, because, man, when something terrible like this goes down, it's so devastating to the Democratic constituency of LGBTQ folks, black folks, indigenous folks, disabled folks, etc., the people that the Democratic Party should be standing for. Whenever something bad like this happens and you want to try to assign any sort of blame, when do any sort of autopsy on how the Democrats got us to this point, boy, does it bring out the resist libs. Oh, the vote blue, no matter who folks were in my mentions this week. Oh, my God. So I'm just going to give you a little taste of this, because a guy I follow, his name online, he goes by Post Malone Ergo Propter Malone, which I think is a great name. He writes, I'm a white dude, but if I was a black person in America right now, I would want to know what the fuck we're going to do about Calais. I think getting Jeffries the gavel drives considerable goodwill in this regard. But there needs to be a plan for 2027 and another for 2029, and they both need to be good. I agree. I think a lot of people are like, okay, let's win the House in 2026. We'll put Hakeem Jeffries in the Speaker of the House position in 2027. You know, that will drive a lot of goodwill. Like, we need to get the gavel back, but then what? We're constantly told, you know, vote blue no matter who. We've got to vote in margins so big they can't be ignored. Too big to rig. Which right off the bat puts us on our bad foot, right? We're already admitting to Republicans, you guys get to win all the close races. If it's really close, you guys get to cheat and get to steal that. We're already setting our expectation that we have to vote like with 5, 10% margins because we just accept they're going to cheat. So the I don't want to talk about that part right now, but that already bugs me that we have to vote so big that they can't cheat it. But I wrote in response to Post Malone Ergo Propter Malone, I said, yeah, the team that had months to prepare for Dobbs is going to be getting right on that one, I'm sure. And that's when the resist libs came out. I got this guy, Astria, came at me. What do you think they could have done? And then Jay Roth answered after him, codify Roe, in question marks, trying to be all sarcastic. I pointed out that shortly after Obama had won election, with a plus 57 margin in the House, a 57-seat Senate that became a 60-seat filibuster-proof Senate for 6 months, and had a plus 7% popular vote margin, Obama decided not to waste political capital on codifying Roe because he had other priorities, if I remember the news from that era correctly. I had another person come, another resist lib, Ashley. Pro-life Democrats still existed in 2008. That supermajority was comprised of a few of them. And I respond, that's the point. That's part of the problem, the existence of pro-life Democrats. Because they're no such thing. They are anti-woman Democrats. Would we accept anti-black Democrats? Anti-Jew Democrats? Oh, but gosh, we need Henry Cuellar's vote so we can accept some anti-woman Democrats. And golly, how come voters don't think we stand for anything? Because we're willing to make all of these sacrifices. We're willing to throw women under the bus because we need Henry Cuellar's vote. There's always somebody in our constituency, in our tent, that people are willing to throw under the bus here. So it goes on. A Radicchio Fritchio, Ohio, replied to me and said the reason that abortion was an issue that deeply divided both major parties in 2009, and they had significantly more pressing matters, like keeping the economy from imploding any worse than it already had at that point. But if you're just going to make bad faith, anachronistic arguments, I'm not particularly interested in having further discussions. Okay, I'll take you on that one. You're right. The economy was destroyed by Bush and the bankers. Absolutely destroyed our economy, and it was a priority of Obama to restore that economy. I agree with that. Funny how, though, he didn't hold Bush or any of the bankers accountable. Funny how there was no prosecutions for any of that stuff that went down. But okay. Had to keep the economy running because we wouldn't want the rich people to get upset. All those people holding stocks and all that money in their banks. We got to keep them happy. So, you know. Women, forget it, we won't codify Roe. But this continued on. And they pointed out that codify Roe wouldn't have done anything. Look at this, the Voting Rights Act was codified and they just destroyed all of that. Ha ha ha, see? Silly liberal, silly pouting liberal. Yeah, you're probably right. Codifying Roe in 2009 probably wouldn't have helped much if Barack Obama went and didn't get Ruth Bader Ginsburg to retire in time enough for him to replace her with a liberal who would have stood by the codification of Roe had it been done. Or if perhaps he didn't let Mitch McConnell unprecedentedly not seat a Supreme Court justice that was nominated, not even hold hearings for a Supreme Court judge, because it always seems Republicans are willing to do what has to be done. Rules be damned. So it continued on in the comments, and I made some comment to the point of, yeah, it always seems there's always reasons. There's always reasons Democrats can't do stuff when they have major majorities and full working control of government. But then Republicans get in and boom, every wish on their list fulfilled. 60 years of civil rights progress erased in the span of Trump. In this 10-year span of Trump, 60 years of civil rights progress. They seem to be able to do amazing things, get their whole wish list. We always have reasons why we can't. That's when this Astria came back and started being a little snotty with me. Yes, there are. You should learn them. You would post fewer silly, uninformed things. Oh, okay. You want to go there? All right. So, silly, uninformed things. Another one came back and added to that rationalization by saying, it's easier to break things than it is to create things. A third came back and said, you ever notice how it takes constant effort to keep your house cleaned? But you can let it go to a sty without any effort at all. So this is something I get quite a bit from these establishment Democrat types, these defenders of folks like the DNC. This excuse that governing is hard. We want to try to do good things and it's just so hard. The Republicans just want to do evil stuff and evil stuff is easy. It's easy to break things. Gosh, I guess I missed that constitutional amendment that required greater majorities to pass votes to create things than the majorities it takes to break things. What a silly, sad little rationalization for the demonstrable fact that when Democrats get into office and have major majorities, they can't get shit done, but Republicans can get into office with 3 seats in the House, 3 seats in the Senate, and a barely a 1% popular vote margin and can pass everything they want to pass. Why is that? Well, it goes back to the Henry Cuellar thing, to this big tent Democrat thing, where we have to let everyone in the tent because Henry Cuellar stands for lots of good things, I'm told. He stands for all sorts of great things, you know, except for, you know, women being breeding slaves. He's for women being breeding slaves. Other than that, though, he's a great Democrat. And I pointed out, you know, would you accept this if instead of being an anti-woman Democrat, they were pro everything else, they're pro LGBT, they're pro Muslim, they're pro people of color, but they just hated Jews. They were just anti-Semites. And someone else came back and said, well, that sounds like you're describing Graham Plattner. Yeah, fucking right. That's exactly what I'm describing. A party that's willing to look at a guy who got a Nazi tattoo and kept it on his body for decades.
Well, he says he's a liberal. He says he's on our side. He says he believes everything we believe. I guess we can just, you know, look the other way at some anti-Semitism.
Maybe I'm asking too much. Maybe I'm a dreamer, but I'm kind of wanting to have a political party that stands for things, that stands for people, and has an absolute hardline stance on that. That someone comes along and says, hey, we believe everything that you believe, you know, except that part about women having control over their own bodies. Can we be a part of your club? Well, sure. Yeah, you'll vote for our judges. You'll vote for our budgets. You'll vote for everything else, you know, except for women having to be breeding slaves. And you keep making compromises like that on all these different sides. And you can't understand why people don't think Democrats stand for anything. You can't understand why the only way Democrats have won elections in my entire lifetime is for Republicans to fuck up so badly that there's no other choice but to have to vote for Democrats. And to go back to Post Malone, ergo Propter Malone's original post, what is the plan? What is the plan beyond winning the election in 2027? All right, we win the election in 2027. There's nothing we can do about Calais because Trump's still president, right? So for 27 and 28, it's pretty much don't let any more new bad shit happen to Trump. from Trump, I should say. Because we've already said impeachment's not on the table, right? I remember Hakeem Jeffries saying, you know, impeachment's not a priority. Gosh, why would we want to impeach someone who is on a daily basis committing an offense so grave it would have been immediately impeached by any prior Congress for any prior president? But because he does it so much and in such volume, he gets a look the other way. We're not going to govern. We're not going to make sure that the laws are faithfully executed or this guy lives up to his oath. It just wouldn't be politically feasible. We just can't do it. You know, nobody wants to impeach the guy. Everybody wants to. Anyway, next 2 years, don't impeach Trump. Try to staunch the damage of anything new that he will do. And then we hope that we win the election again in 2028, 29. You know, after 2 years of not really doing anything because we can't. But we're going to win the election in 2029, have a Democratic president, and then hope we also get a Democratic Senate. Oh, and let's consider, during that time between 27, 28, you know, we've got Thomas and Alito, both up in their late ages. Either one of them die or retire between now and the midterm election, and you know the Senate is going to throw 2 40-year-old Federalist types onto the bench and give us a 5-seat court of Trump appointees. 5 out of the 9 will be Trump appointees if Thomas and Alito retire within the next few months. Now, the word is that Alito might, but Thomas doesn't want to, because Thomas, he's the second longest serving Supreme Court justice in history. He wants to set the record, and that won't happen until 2028. So what's our plan, Democrats? What's the plan if Alito announces tomorrow that he's going to retire? There is no plan, because the Republicans have 53 seats in the Senate, and they will have the hearings, and they will get their 40-year-old Federalist Society type, and they'll put them on the bench. So now you got 4 Trump appointees on the bench, and then we're rounding into 2029. All right, let's hope that we keep that we... Now, if we win the Senate in 2026, that's a different story. If we do manage to eke out a majority in the Senate, will Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, should he become the majority leader, does Chuck Schumer have the balls to not hold any hearings for a replacement for Alito and or Thomas for 2 years? That would have to be the plan. Post Malone, ergo Propter Malone, wants to know the plan. What we should be hearing from Democrats right now is, elect us to the House, elect us to the Senate, and we promise you no new Supreme Court justices until 2029. We will not hold any hearings on any Supreme Court justices until 2029. We will observe the McConnell rule. We will go by the precedent set by Mitch McConnell and not hold any hearings for a retirement for Alito or a retirement for Thomas. They have to stay on the bench till 2029 if you guys want to hold your Supreme Court. The fact that we're not hearing that 24 hours a day on every cable news network from every Democratic talking head, that they will not seat another Trump justice, period, end of paragraph, no amendments at all. We will not seat another Trump justice. Have you heard it? Have you heard any of them say that? No. They can't even say that they impeach Trump. So, let's say we hold the Senate. Let's say we get the Senate in 2027. Let's say that we actually follow the McConnell rule and don't seat replacements for Thomas and Alito. If they've stepped off the court, now the court's a 7-member court with a 4-3 conservative majority. Now, 2029 comes along. Maybe we win the presidency and we hold the Senate and we keep the House. Now we can start nominating some justices. Okay. So we nominate a justice to replace Alito. We nominate one to replace Thomas. Now we've got a 5-4 liberal majority. Is that the plan? That could be one of the plans, but I haven't heard it from anyone. Another one of the plans could be that when we get into the trifecta in 2029, House, Senate, and presidency, that we pass a law to expand the court to 13 justices, one for each circuit. And then appoint 4 liberals and have ourselves a 7-6 liberal majority. Or if we can replace Alito and Thomas, a 9-4? That would be a plan. That would be something we could be hearing from the Democrats right now. But when you bring things up like this, you'll get another response from the resist libs types is they don't have the votes for it. You got to give them the votes for it. The people aren't enough behind it. They have to have the votes for it. There just aren't the votes for that now. There's not enough votes for it. We'll make some. That's the other learned helplessness from Democrats that just frustrates the hell out of me. Oh, the people aren't ready for it. Well, get them ready. Do you think the people were ready for Gestapo in the street, murdering citizens and dragging away our neighbors, never to be heard from again into concentration camps? No, they built the support for that. The Republicans built the support for that. This talk about it's harder to break things. Bullshit. Breaking things is enormously unpopular. Nearly everything that Democrats stand for, when you poll it among the American people, is enormously popular, from 60 to 80% support. Poll the same stuff that Republicans want to do, and it's never popular at all, except maybe a gun thing here or there. So they're already starting behind the chains. They're already behind the chains when it comes to trying to pass things, because what they want to pass is enormously unpopular. Democrats... It should be easier to pass your stuff. No, because Democrats don't go and build the support for it. Republicans built the support for the wall and mass deportations now, after years and years of cultivating that fear on Fox News and all of their town halls and speaking to their constituents. They built that support. These resist libs seems to think that the Republicans' ability to break things just happens automatically and they can do it on a whim. They have to do the same stuff we have to do. They have to convince people. They have to sell their ideas. So miss me with this whole governing is hard. There's terrible reasons why we can't do things. And then to come back the very next thing, the only thing we can do for them is we have to vote for them in large margins and continue to vote for them and continue to give them support. Well, yeah, I agree with that. So tell me why it hasn't happened. Tell me why the only party that's ever even been able to put together 3 successive terms in my lifetime as the Republican Party. Reagan to Bush. There has not been a Democrat in my lifetime who's ever been able to pass the baton on to a Democratic president-elect. Be it 1 2-term Democrat or 1-term Democrat, Carter and Biden or Obama and Clinton, but we never get 2 Democrats in a row. And it's for the reasons I'm telling you. For this stand for everything, but we stand for nothing kind of party. This, we can rush really quick with our legislative majorities to fix things for the bankers. Oh, we can rescue that economy real quick, but get us out of Afghanistan? Or legalize medical marijuana? Yeah, vote blue no matter who. We voted for Barack Obama and we got more medical marijuana raids than Bush. We continued to fight in Afghanistan. We bailed out the bankers, but never prosecuted them. We let Bush and Cheney get away with their torture regime. We did nothing, nothing to address the growth of fatherland security and the surveillance state, and in fact, made it worse. Obama continued with the warrantless wiretapping. We let Putin have Crimea. After famously drawing a red line he should not cross. There you go, Democrats, not following through on that, set the stage for the invasion, wholesale invasion of Ukraine. I mean, this is a Democratic Party that can't even raise the minimum fucking wage from $7.25. Yes, I know Obama got it to $7.25 in 2009 and did nothing with it in 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, or 16. And then Joe Biden, if I recall, when Joe Biden got into office in 2020, he had control of the House and Senate, didn't he? Did minimum wage get increased then either? No? All right. Because rich people and super PACs don't like that. And that's the real excuse for what's going on here. All of this governing is hard. Democrats are trying to create things and Republicans are trying to destroy. It's a lot easier to let your bedroom go turn into a sty than to have to keep it clean every day. The reason behind all those rationalizations is a smokescreen for the real reason. Governing for people is hard. Corporations, super PACs, what they want. Oh, Democrats are ready to step right up. Oh, we can pass some things then, can't we? And that's what I think the American people are finally starting to clue into. And that's what I think the Democrats are so missing here. Think about the nominees we've had from the Democratic Party through my lifetime. Walter Mondale, Michael Dukakis, John Kerry. Make you really just want to jump up and shout, don't they? Like, can't we have somebody that we can get excited about? Oh, Barack Obama. We did get excited about Barack Obama. Barack Obama came along and we were like, oh my gosh, finally. A Democrat who stands for us, the people. Yes, we can. Not Michael Dukakis coming down from Massachusetts or Bill Clinton pretending like he was a man of the people, but then enacting the crime bill and all the terrible things that happened with NAFTA and so forth. These Democrats, these third way Democrats who found the third way was suck up to corporations and money. What are we doing trying to get the votes of regular people? That Clintonian turn to neoliberalism turned off the American electorate. It seems to us like there's two parties. There's the really hateful party of money, and then there's the more inclusive party of money. There's the rich people party with the swastikas and the rich people party with the rainbow flags. But it's all for the rich people. As George Carlin said, it's a big club and we ain't in it. That's what's become so frustrating to us. And if there was a Democrat who came along who actually stood for the people, rejected corporate PAC money, and went after the bad guys, prosecuted the fraudsters, the criminals, because we are living in two Americas, as John Edwards famously observed years ago. And it seems like the two parties represent one of those Americas, just different sides of one of those Americas. And the rest of us are all doing without. We want a Democratic Party with a vision to the future, a vision to that Star Trek utopia future that we're all want to be a part of. One that recognizes the rest of the world is moving on without us. We get onto our social media feeds and we see bullet trains and we see solar being put up all over the place and countries that are generating more power than they use through renewables and electric vehicles that cost less than $10,000 that get 600 miles on a full charge that takes 10 minutes to charge. And we're wondering, why can't we have nice things? We see people that, friends of ours that go abroad to Spain or Australia or Japan and have some sort of accident, car accident, illness, whatever it might be. And they get online and they tell their little stories in an Instagram reel or a thread or something about how, they went in and from the moment they went in to the moment they left, it took them 90 minutes. And with all the treatments and the tests and the drugs and the prescriptions afterwards and the costs for the doctors, They ended up with a bill of $37. 90 minutes and $37. Ask anyone who's ever sat in an emergency room for 6-7 hours waiting to be seen how much they'd love that. That's the future we want, but we don't get Democrats promising that future because we just don't have the votes yet. Instead of going out and making the votes, instead of painting the picture, building the support, building the dream, give people something to aim for. They don't know what's even possible at this point until you show them or give them something to believe in. We want to be the party of bullet trains and solar power and EVs and so much more than the sad excuses we get from these resist libs online who keep telling us governing is hard.
Personally, I think their methods are a bit too extreme.
It was just way too radical and way beyond anything they were doing.
It's like all your proposals, too progressive, too risky, and too costly in the short run.
Always a little too radical for them.
Oh, it's way too extreme.
Either side of that argument's a little too extreme for me, so.
Continuing on this theme of Democrats failing to take seriously the fascism we are currently experiencing, we can take a look at the state level, because in addition to the horrendous Calais decision that was handed down by the SCROTUS, we had the Virginia Supreme Court rule 4-3 to invalidate the new maps that were drawn by Virginians by the voters' approval to change their gerrymander from a 7-4 Democratic lean to a 10-1 Democratic lean. So if you're following this along, Texas goes ahead and just does it through their legislature. No vote. That's cool. They pick up 5 seats. California does it through the initiative process, getting buy-in from the voters. They pick up 5 seats. But then other Republican states go ahead and do their gerrymanders and get some more seats. But when the Democrats try again in Virginia, their own Supreme Court shoots them down. We're stuck with the 7-4 map. What are we going to do about it? What's the plan to go forward? Just like we're asking the Democrats, what's the plan to deal with Calais? What's the plan to deal with this in Virginia before we get to the 2026 election? You had millions of voters decide they want these new maps, and now you're going to let a 4-3 court say you can't have them. What was the reaction from the Democrats? They put out a statement saying they will abide by the ruling of the Virginia Supreme Court. Bend over. Here it comes again. It's Bohica time in the Virginia Democratic Party.
But Russ, what can they do? Governing is hard.
Well, I'll tell you what they can do. Under the Virginia Constitution, the legislature has the absolute right to set the mandatory retirement age of the members of the Virginia Supreme Court. And it takes effect immediately. With, like, after it takes effect, whatever the year is that they reach, what they set, you have 20 days, and then after that 20 days, you're out of the seat. So, Abigail Spanberger, the governor of Virginia, could call a special session of the Virginia State Assembly, Commonwealth Assembly, could call her legislature into session for a special session in which this democratically controlled legislature could write a retirement age for those Virginia Supreme Court justices to be 54 years old, which just so happens to be the age of the youngest member of the majority that voted 4-3 to throw the maps out. The legislature could set the mandatory retirement age for 54, boot out all 4 of those justices who ruled against the maps, and then Spanberger could nominate 4 new justices to be approved by this legislature that is democratically controlled, have a court that would pass and accept those laws, and then pass another law again, and this time have it stick. So there's an actual mechanism by which Democrats can win here. They just have to do it. Have you heard of them doing it yet? Did you get that press release a mere 15 minutes after that Supreme Court decision explaining exactly what they were going to do and how they were going to undo this decision by this radical court? Did you hear that? Did you read that? No, you didn't. Because that's just all hypothetical. Them all, well, God, we couldn't do that. Gosh, if we went and set the retirement age to 54 and got rid of all those judges, and then what would happen if years from now, then this something similar, and they would do the same thing? They will. They will anyway, whether you do this or not. Because Republicans, when they have an opportunity to do something, no matter how radical, no matter how unprecedented, so long as they can get away with it, so long as it is technically legal, they will do it. That's what we're wanting from Democrats. But we get this Virginia Supreme Court ruling. We get the Calais decision. And then I see this report from the Minneapolis Star Tribune with a headline that reads, Klobuchar pitches moderation in governor's race, rebuffs redistricting push for Minnesota. Yeah, Amy Klobuchar, that's just what you want. Noun, verb, and affordability. Huh. Pitches moderation, rebuffs redistricting push. No, no, we wouldn't want to write our Minnesota maps to give Democrats all the seats. Why, that wouldn't be fair. That wouldn't be moderate. Once again, Democrats continuing to get dunked on by a dog playing basketball, pointing at the rule book saying, dogs can't play basketball. Democrats are going to moderate ourselves right into the Fourth Reich.
I'd love a loyal opposition. I'd love a Republican Party that was conservative in some ways, that didn't agree with me on a whole bunch of stuff, but believed in rule of law and judicial independence. And
I was talking earlier about my desire to have Democrats go on the offense and call out Trump to his face and play hardball and do in whatever situation what Republicans would do in the same situation. And I'm afraid that there's just far too few Democrats that are in a fighting position right now. We see Gavin Newsom doing his trolling and such, but there's a problem right there. And I was also talking earlier about the Democratic Party that has such a big tent. And all of this is kind of coalescing together to show why these rationalizations of Democrats and governing is hard just fall flat with me. First of all, you've got Gavin Newsom, who's showing himself to be a fighter, and people are starting to be attracted to him from that, you know, his posts against Trump and being all caps and sarcastic and stuff. And people finally seeing someone call out Trump for the brain-addled idiot that he is. But then the problem with Gavin Newsom, which is the problem that I've been identifying with these Democrats, is their willingness to so quickly and easily throw certain of our constituencies under the bus. In the case with Gavin Newsom, it's trans people and people without housing. Gavin Newsom was gleefully throwing people's stuff away during the cleaning of homeless encampments to show that how tough he was on the homeless issue. And of course, we know his stance on transgender issues and how he sidled up to Charlie Kirk, had Charlie Kirk on his podcast, had Steve Bannon on his podcast. We need to talk to these people. No, we don't. And that's the big problem. Democrats refuse to play this game as it's being played, refuse to understand that there are two sides and the other side is the enemy. They are not our friends across the aisle. They are not people we wish to seek bipartisan compromise with, because what bipartisan compromise always means is, how can we throw someone under the bus? Who can we agree to short their civil rights? So in that line of thinking, I saw the interview of former President Barack Obama by Stephen Colbert that was on the show the other day. And the one particular part of the segment that really got to me was when Obama says that he loves a Republican Party that was conservative. And he misses a loyal opposition of the past that believed in the rule of law, judicial independence, empirical evidence, science, and wasn't constantly tapping into our worst impulses. Barack, what in the Iran-Contra Willie Horton waterboarding are you talking about? This is a Republican Party that denied you a Supreme Court seat without precedent. You think they follow judicial independence and believe in the rule of law? When did this Republican Party exist? Are you talking about the one that came before you with George W. Bush? You know, the one with the wiretapping and the waterboarding? That one that followed the rule of law? That one that believed in judicial independence? You know, the one that got him the presidency through a 5-4 Bush v. Gore decision? Is that or was it the Republican Party before that? The Reagan-Bush Republican Party, the one that was knee-deep in Iran-Contra? Is that the one that followed the rule of law and believed in judicial independence and empirical evidence? You know, the one that wouldn't even admit that AIDS existed? You know, the one that believes in science and empirical evidence. Is it that Republic? Or do we have to go farther, Barack? Do we have to go back to the Republican Party of Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford? You know, the one that believed in the rule of law and judicial independence and empirical evidence, science, and wasn't constantly tapping into our worst impulses. Was that the Republican loyal opposition that you missed, the party of Nixon? Or do we have to go farther back to Dwight Eisenhower? And I'm sorry, I don't have any dirt on Dwight Eisenhower. I'm not old enough. What in the Iran-Contra Willie Horton are you talking about, Barack? He goes on, in questioning from Colbert, was asking about, you know, this rift between the liberals and the left in the Democratic Party, which by right away from Colbert's point is already a centrist framing that casts the establishment versus the progressives as what's really going on. The DLC donor class, you know, Democrats versus the populace, the Bernie class, the AOC class. That's the rift that Colbert's talking about it, but he wants to call it liberals versus the left. And Obama dismisses that and goes on to list all these lofty ideals that we all agree on.
I'm not as worried about this so-called rift between the left and liberals, as you describe it, because I think that within the Democratic Party, and I would argue a bunch of independents and even some Republicans as well, there's an overarching belief in equality, fairness. If you work, you should be able to make a living wage and support a family and retire with dignity and respect. And you know, we should not allow companies to just run roughshod over the rights of workers. There are a bunch of things that we agree on, and it's really more of a question of, all right, what are the specific things that we have to do?
Of all these things that we supposedly agree between the progressives and the centrists, everything we agree on is thwarted by that loyal opposition you so love. When is the last time you heard a Republican wax poetic about the need for there to be a loyal Democratic opposition? When's the last time you heard a Republican ex-president say, boy, I miss the loyal Democrats of the past? And how does that stack up versus the number of times you've heard Republicans compare Democrats to being evil, America-hating communists who wish to destroy the United States by importing immigrant hordes? You want to count that scoreboard up for me? Because right now it's a shutout. Republicans are relentlessly and thoroughly on message that Democrats and the left are an evil in the United States that must be eradicated to install permanent Republican majority rule. They make no bones about it. They're absolutely clear about it. We are the enemy. We are bad. There is nothing good about us. So the interview continues, and Colbert starts pressing him on the things that Trump is up to. All the lawlessness, the criming. And Obama speaks to it without ever mentioning Trump's name.
Two of the core principles of a democracy. We can survive a lot. Bad policy, funky elections. There's a bunch of stuff that, you know, we can overcome. We can't overcome the politicization of the criminal justice system, the awesome power of the state. You can't have a situation in which whoever's in charge of the government starts using that to go after their political enemies or reward their friends, right? So another power maybe I'd say would be you, although this is in the Constitution, it's a little hard to change, but maybe don't pardon people who've given you a bunch of campaign contributions.
He says that the independence of the DOJ is important. You can't have an executive wielding the attorney general as his personal consigliere. Our democracy can survive anything but that. But no, I'm not going to mention the name of the person who's doing it right now. I'm just going to leave this vague generality glittering in the stratosphere here. Because you voters are intelligent, I'm sure you'll put the pieces together and understand that it's Trump and the Republicans we should be voting against because they're bad people. You'll work it out. I'm sure you'll all figure it out. He continues about the pardon power, about Trump just basically selling off pardons to the highest bidder. And Obama gives an answer that you shouldn't give pardons to a bunch of people that give you campaign money or invested in your businesses, whoever you might be, you know, somebody who might have done this somewhere at some time. I'm sure you'll all figure it out. Democrats continue to miss the story of politics of the last 46 years since Ronald Reagan. You know what that secret is? You know what that story is about America? America sucks. America sucks for most Americans compared to how it used to be. Americans can't afford to fill up their car with gas. Americans can't afford health care. Americans can't afford child care. Americans are going broke. Americans are dying of easily preventable diseases. Americans are shivering in the streets, living in tents. Americans can't find jobs. Americans' kids are moving back in with their parents because they can't find housing. America sucks. And we look out at the rest of the world and it doesn't suck. And they have bullet trains and they have solar power and they have EVs and they have free health care. They've got paternity leave, and we wonder, why can't we? Why does America suck? That's been the story since Ronald Reagan, and the response the Democrats give you is it's the left. Well, everything sucks because of the Democrats. The Democrats and their damn illegal aliens. The Democrats and their illegal aliens and all their leftist stuff. That's they're taxing and all they're taxing you and they're ruining everything. Those Democrats and those leftists, they're making America suck. America sucks so bad right now because of the Democrats. If your life sucks right now, you can thank Democrats for that because Democrats suck and they made America suck and Democrats are all the fault and you should vote Republican. What did Democrats do? Well, vote for us. We'll govern better. We're better at governing. Yeah, vote for us. Remember when we were president back during Clinton? Remember Clinton back during Clinton and we were president? And we made NAFTA and the crime bill? And yeah. And yes, yeah. But then we got Obama and we actually raised the minimum wage to $7.25. We got it up to $7.25, but yeah, we didn't make DC a state, and we didn't, you know, solidify abortion rights or anything like that, but, you know, we did get it up to 725. And America still sucks. And we saw the people that made America suck. We saw the Reagan-Bush criminals who made America suck. And we actually came to realize it after 12 years, and they made America suck so bad, we finally turned to Democrats. And did they punish the people that made America suck? Did they hold them to account for making America suck? No. Same thing with Obama. We saw Bush ride in and bring up the, you know, send us to war in Iraq based on lies, instigate a campaign of torture, develop a Department of Fatherland Security, the precursor to the ICE Gestapo that we're having in our streets right now. Massive scandals, financial scandals, the banking collapse, the Great Recession, the mismanagement of Hurricane Katrina. Once again, Republicans made America suck even worse. So bad that we were finally even willing to vote for a black guy. But did he hold the people that made America suck to account? No. We've got to look forward, not back. We've got to rebuild the economy. Got to make sure the rich people are happy. Make sure that graph of rich people's feelings called the Dow Jones Industrials keeps going up. And the proof of this, this idea that America sucks and we're looking for someone to punish those who have made it suck, was the rise of Bernie. Bernie also recognized that America sucks, but he cast the blame on where it actually belongs. The billionaire class, the Epstein class, the wealthy who have rigged the game in their favor and bought the leadership of both parties. That's why his insurgent campaign was such a danger. That's why, for one of the few times you actually saw Democrats all rally together and strongly come out against a perceived enemy. They're really good at that when it comes from their left, not so good at it when it comes from the right. So Democrats, if you'd like to take some advice from someone here at the bottom end of the economic ladder, someone with a lot of friends in many of those marginalized groups that you're willing to throw under the bus in speaking of bipartisan compromise, understand the fight. America sucks, and we know America sucks right now. And America sucks because of Republicans. Make it clear that Republicans are the enemy. Republicans are the problem. Republicans are the reason for everything that sucks in America since 1980. One problem with that is you're also going to have to acknowledge how Democrats have sucked, too. You're going to have to acknowledge, you're going to have to throw Bill Clinton under the bus for his NAFTA, for his betrayal of labor, his betrayal of the African-American community with the crime bill, his wife calling them super predators at the time. You're going to have to come to terms with Bill Clinton's sexual predation. We're going to have to acknowledge the faults of Barack Obama and his failures, like Crimea, for example. We're going to have a new type of Democrat who's willing to piss off billionaires, who refuses to take corporate PAC money. It's going to take a rock star, once-in-a-lifetime generational type candidate. And seeing as we've already had Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, who are two of the greatest political candidates who've ever existed, I don't like our chances for getting a third. And then I look over the possible contenders for 2028, and I know it's a long time ahead to look for that. I see very few people out there that get me excited. AOC is one. And already we're having all the talk and the framing from the mainstream and the newspapers and such as, oh, tut, 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 AOC can't be president. She's far too left. Far too left to become president. Don't even bring her up. Oh, how ridiculous. And of course, America's not ready to vote for a woman. Haven't we proven that twice now with Hillary and Kamala? And there's no way they'd be ready to vote for a gay man like Pete Buttigieg. No. Getting us all set up and tilling the soil for a Gavin Newsom nomination. I really believe that's the direction the Democrats will go. They'll go with Newsom. Unless we can do something about it, and I don't know. I become less and less sanguine on the notion that this is improvable. That maybe 2015 was our high water mark as far as civil rights in this country, and maybe the inevitable disintegration and destruction of a nation that was forged with the original sins of compromise with slavery and genocide of natives. Maybe this is a nation that can't stand in its current form. I'd like to hear more from people willing to make radical changes to this country. A complete rewrite of our Constitution, an Article 5 Constitutional Convention. Why not? All the opposition I've ever heard to that idea in the past from folks on the left was, we can't have an Article 5 Constitutional Convention. There'll be no rules, and they can set it up. The conservatives can set it up in such a way that they'd get everything they want. Why they could end women's abortion rights, and they could kill the voting rights of black people, and they could export all the immigrants, and, you know, all the stuff they're doing right now under the current Constitution. What do we got to lose? Get serious, Democrats, about some serious, precedent-shattering, earth-shaking, constitutional hardball. Major changes like packing the court, like nuking the filibuster. It's time. This nation cannot continue to be led by its white minority. This is increasingly becoming a multiracial nation. California is a minority-majority state. Texas is joining soon. We've got to come up with a solution to this. And I don't know, maybe the solution is we give them Idaho, Utah, Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, and South Dakota. We wall the whole thing off, let them all move to it and call it Whitetopia. And give a $50,000 grant to anyone who wants to move out. Because I don't know how we continue to live with these Confederates, with these traitors, these fascists. These racists, these homophobes, these transphobes, these misogynists. I don't want to be in a nation with them anymore. So either we, the majority of LGBTQ+, black, brown, indigenous, disabled, and right-thinking white folks like me, it's time we put our majority together and only back candidates who are going to be serious fighters for this new multiracial democracy. And when I'm not hearing any plans for dealing with things like Calais that we knew was coming, same thing with Dobbs. The fact that the court was going to take abortion rights away and take voting rights away was never in doubt. And now, after they happen, we don't even hear strong words of how they're going to address this, much less prepping the ground before those things went down to get people ready for the radical changes that would have to happen. But we need fighters in the Democratic Party now, and that's all we're looking for right now. That's part of the reason that Graham Plattner's doing so well. That's part of the reason why Janet Mills had to drop out. Once again, the Democratic Party and its wise octogenarian leadership thought, you know who we need to beat 70-something-year-old Susan Collins in an atmosphere where the last president was booted out because he was too old at 82 and the current president is almost 80 and falling asleep in cabinet meetings, and the Democratic Party has had, what, 6 people die in office? 5, 6, 4? I don't know what the exact number is. They had one recently. A number of 70-year-olds die in office, one of whom, Jerry Connolly, they made a committee chair knowing that he was battling cancer. We have a Democratic Party that's more attuned to its own internal structure with respect to seniority than who is actually fighting and who is actually popular with the people. Yet, no plans out of Jeffries. We hear no words out of Schumer about how he'll not seat any Supreme Court nominees. Another thing I see coming up about this Calais thing, from people out there that realize, oh, well, the politicians aren't going to do shit, is calls for black athletes to not sign up at SEC schools. Boy, this would change in a second if all the black athletes that were playing football at Alabama and Florida and Georgia and Louisiana State, boy, if all those black athletes weren't on those teams, boy, they'd change their mind about all that Jim Crow stuff, wouldn't they? It's an interesting thought, but I do have one criticism. Why has it got to be the black athletes? How about all the athletes? How about all young men out there, all young five-star recruits out there, white and black and Latino and Asian? If all these young 17-year-old men said, you know what? I'm not going to commit to any school whose legislature is committed to Jim Crow. I'll go play at Oregon. I'll go play at UCLA. I'll go play at UW. I'll go play at Northwestern. I'll go play, trying to think of a New England school. Rutgers? Okay. I guess that's New Jersey. But you get my point? Don't put this on the black athletes to do it. Let's put it on all athletes. And for that matter, entertainers, too. There was a time when Ray Charles wouldn't play in Georgia because of its Jim Crow seating, where Marilyn Monroe had to lobby to get Ella Fitzgerald gigs at a jazz club because they wouldn't let black people perform, where Betty White lost her TV show in the 50s. She had a variety show in the 50s. Because the network wanted to get rid of the black guy she had tap dancing on the show. She wouldn't. Or a Charles Schulz, when he was drawing Peanuts, and he would draw Franklin, the black character, and the Southern newspapers would say, we're not going to run your call, run your strip if you don't stop drawing the black kid. And they said, well, then stop running my strip then. That's what we need. We need some of that ain't gonna play Sun City energy from the 80s. When musical artists refuse to book gigs in South Africa because of its apartheid policies, that's what we need now in the United States. Movie productions refusing to film in states that have Jim Crow laws. Musicians refusing to hold concerts where they have Jim Crow laws. But nobody's going to get behind that kind of movement if there isn't some leadership somewhere rallying people to that cause. Most people aren't full-time into politics like you and I are, paying attention to what's going on. They don't know what's happening. They don't know that Jim Crow is back and now has the legal stamp of approval from our Supreme Court. We need leaders that start making this case that it is unethical, immoral, and wrong to perform in states that treat their citizens unequally, that do not abide by our Constitution. The pressure needs to be applied. It'd be nice if some politicians were leading it, but if they're not, we're going to have to lead it. It's going to have to become so popular that they have no choice but to get on our side. Boycott Jim Crow. Boycott Idaho. By God, let's fight for some better Democrats. And that's the end of this joint, my friends. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. News, music, video clips, and social media posts are reproduced under fair use copyright laws for commentary and analysis. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by Russ Boom Boom Belville.
What's the boom boom for?
Boom boom boom.
Which brings us to our post-credits scene.
Ditka versus the Giants. Okay, score, gentlemen.
All right, after the heart attack,
I gotta say, Dicka 17, Giants 14. He just barely gets by.
Now, I don't know if you saw this. There was a White House event the other day, a presidential physical fitness test that Trump's trying to put back into play here. He had a whole bunch of kids at the Oval Office. Kennedy was there and some others, but the kids are surrounding him. He's sitting at the Resolute desk, and he's going off about, you know, Obama and the warfare and just all these subjects that you wouldn't really be talking about with kids around. But the thing that caught the attention of YouGov and some others was Donald Trump asking an 8-year-old boy, "You think you could take me in a fight?" That's not the question that a grown man often asks an 8-year-old boy, but YouGov decided to ask this in a poll question to ask people, who do you think would win in a physical fight between an 8-year-old boy and Donald Trump? They actually polled this, and 31% of U.S. adults think an 8-year-old boy could kick Donald Trump's ass. Now, look, I don't think much of Donald Trump. I think he can take an 8-year-old. Just on body weight alone. Come on, this is ridiculous. 54% of Democrats thought that an 8-year-old boy could beat Donald Trump. Are you kidding me, guys? Come on now. Like, I don't like Donald Trump either, but come on now. And only 6% of Republicans. Here's where I actually have to agree with the Republicans on this. 72% of them said Trump would beat an 8-year-old boy. I think Trump's got it in him to take the 8-year-old. But they also asked, who do you think would win in a physical fight between you and Donald Trump? Now, in this case, U.S. adults, 55% of all adults think they could beat Donald Trump in a fight. Now, we are talking about all adults, so maybe someone gets this poll question, they're 80 years old in a wheelchair, and they think, I couldn't beat Donald Trump. So that's, you know, there's going to be some. That's a fair assessment, right? But come on, man. Donald Trump's like 79, he's got to weigh at least 275. He's not got much cardio, you know that. If he didn't tap you in the first couple of strikes, I think you could probably kick Donald Trump's ass. So 55% of adults said they could. 75% of Democrats said they could, but only 33% of Republicans. Only one out of three big, tough, strong, Republican, manly men types think they could beat Donald Trump in a fight. 39% said they couldn't. Fully two out of five of these big, tough, macho F-150 Ford truck red state MAGA guys, two out of five of them don't think they can take Trump in a fight. Guys, you've been paying way too much attention to those AI drawings of Trump being all chiseled and manly and buff. The dude's a schmoo. You'd kick his ass, trust me. You can contact me by email at radicalrus@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalrus.com and nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at radicalrus.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next week, take care of each other. You plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.